This is The Difference, a podcast for nonprofit fundraising in a for-profit world, presented by Convergent Nonprofit Solutions, a leader in nonprofit fundraising. Convergent's professionals can help your nonprofit secure sustainable funding now and for the future.
It's a real honor to be talking to Tom Ahern for this podcast. And I have to admit, as your host, that I've been a fan of Tom and his work for many years. Tom, I feel, is one of the top fundraising professionals that I'm aware of. And I do a lot of reading and research on fundraising. And I've gone back to Tom's work time and time again, particularly when it comes to how do you market a campaign or a fundraising effort. And those of you who are listening are aware that Convergent is primarily a campaign management company. We'll go in and do a study to help an organization understand if they're ready to undertake a fundraising campaign. And once that's done, and then we hope that the organization is positioned well based on the feedback that we've received from its, we like to call them investors in the organization, to give us a roadmap on how to approach them and what plan of work or program of work they're willing to fund. And our, Tom, our campaigns are typically, we're asking for commitments over a 5-year, I call it the funding horizon. That gives the organizations that are Convergent's clients an opportunity to know what their essential cash flow is so that they can do the strategic work of their organization. So I am curious first, Tom, to ask you, what do you think of that approach?
It's definitely the longer time frame is the better. One of the things I've noticed, and this is probably not all that relevant to your audience, but in the nonprofit sector right now, the average tenure of a new fundraiser, newly anointed fundraiser, is about 18 months. And that's not enough to do anything. Our basic recommendation is that if you can't put in 3 years, you can't build a fundraising program. And so 5 years is even better.
Well, and what I like to say that what Convergent does, I call it fundraising on steroids, because we're engaged with our client for a specific period of time, 6 months, maybe a year at best. Right. And we're not cultivating those relationships over a longer term. And I think of the collegiate world and the university world, where they have a development team and they're working with their major donor database and having time to cultivate those relationships. So I'm curious what you think about what's the most effective way when you're raising money over a very short period of time, and then you're not there and you're counting on an organization that may not have a development staff per se. They have an executive director and maybe a marketing person. What's the best way for them to keep those, we call them investors, engaged with the organization?
We often do two things at once. I'm part of a creative collective called the Case Writers. We do more than cases. We do direct mail and all the rest of that. But the approach we have found is the most promising for the client is we kind of create original templates for stuff, and then we train them at the same time to do it in-house. So I can cite two newsletters that we've done in the last couple of years during the pandemic. One makes $500,000 every time it's mailed. Another one, which is for a cause in San Francisco Bay, makes about $70,000 to $90,000 every time it's mailed. Much smaller list. But both of those are now created in-house. We started it, we rode the horse for the first few issues until it got figured out. And we knew the target audience, and we knew, you know, what the stories could be, and we kind of ironed out the wrinkles. They were listening, and that was intentional. It didn't accidentally happen. They were there to be trained.
Well, regardless of the nonprofit sector, and you're doing this training and with several different types of organizations, are there seven deadly sins that you need to address with in terms of writing the appeal or the case statement?
I'm not sure I could go through all seven. There are probably 17. But I would say number one is not really understanding your target audience. I'll give you an example. We worked on a campaign, happened to be in the state of Rhode Island where I live, and the campaign was for affordable housing. And for years, the ministers and, you know, faith leaders had gone up to the legislature trying to get them to release money to build affordable housing units. For years, the legislature said, absolutely. But the basic message was, it's the right thing to do. And that's what the faith leaders came in with. And every year, when you finally get down to the month where the budget was crunched, nothing ever happened. Year after year after year, decades of no money for affordable housing. So we looked around the United States and we found a state where they had appropriated quite a bit of money for affordable housing. We called them up and said, what's your secret? What did you do that's different? And they said, well, we changed it to an economic development model. And that changed everything. And then we went to the legislature. It took a couple of years. It took about $1 million in messaging, you know, work. The result was, when you could go to the legislature and say, this is about economic development, you cannot have a good economy if you do not have places to house your workers. We had examples of people working at Nordstrom's, as you know, a high-end department store, and yet they were sleeping at night at a homeless shelter. So we brought that case to the legislature, and now since that period, and it's about 15 years, they have appropriated over $150 million for affordable housing. So when you can change the message specifically to your target audience, the one thing we learned from talking to the other state was, legislators can avoid almost everything except economic development.
Very true. In fact, we would call what you crafted there giving the investing community investable outcomes.
Right? Yeah, these were working people. And we had teachers driving 50 miles every day to get to their classrooms because they couldn't live in their own community, things like that.
Why do nonprofits have a tendency to communicate what they do rather than what I termed investable outcomes or the results of their work?
Well, it's because it's what you know best. The big distinction I noticed when I came into the nonprofit world from the commercial world, where I'd been selling all sorts of stuff, was that they really didn't understand that they had a customer. The customer is your donor. And what that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, somebody, some household giving a small gift at Christmas. It is perhaps, you know, your business leaders in the community, the people that you rely on to provide that kind of momentum and to say, yeah, we should do this. A lot of charities think that maybe if I explain to you what we do here, what the mission is, what the services are, that you will say, oh, well, you're pretty good at what you do. I guess I will support you. But that is a weak affiliation. The stronger affiliation, which I learned from commercial marketing, was what's in it for me. And for me being whatever the, you know, mental entity is, what's in it for our community? What's in it for our future? Where's the vision here?
I call it the radio station that's playing in everyone's head, a WIIFM. What's
yes.
in it for me? So is fundraising essentially the art of storytelling?
To a degree. Storytelling is a shortcut. We learn through stories. And before literacy and before all the rest of that, what are technologies, basically, we transferred knowledge generation to generation through storytelling. And I have several books that are based on this, the idea that our brains actually evolved to accept storytelling as kind of the easiest thing to understand. In the nonprofit world, you're often telling before and after stories. So you're coming in saying, well, here's the problem. And then here's what the solution was, thanks to you, the donor. And here's, you know, and let me give you an example, a poster child of somebody who went, you know, the entire journey and came out the other end, and it's a much better journey. You use stories because they're faster. I can write a story, Jay, in 50 words that will take you from beginning to end and give you a really clear idea of why this is a good solution to this problem.
Then what needs to surround that story? What are the other elements that come into play to make, in a manner of speaking, the story complete?
Well, first of all, you can't make it up. So a lot of charities, when we start with this and say, you got to have some stories, they're going, well, I don't know. We don't have stories. Well, yes, you do. You just probably haven't gone out looking for them. You know, you saw it with a social service agency, which is not what you're working with generally. You go to your frontline people and say, tell us some stories. You know, what do you hear on a daily basis? You know, we'll anonymize it. We won't talk about names or anything like that. Won't embarrass anybody, but we need to have the real life of this service that our charity provides. Now, with economic development, be resurrecting a downtown in a industrial city that has seen better days. All sorts of things. I was looking at some of your clients, and I've been to many of these places, and they are doing some interesting work to bring it back. And now that housing has become so ridiculously expensive in areas like where I live up near Boston, you're seeing a resurgence of towns in the middle, and that's great.
What else comes to your mind in terms of how to be an effective fundraiser?
And I'll give you an example. This is for a college up in Canada, in Calgary. So first of all, Calgary is an energy-based economy. Now, there are some other major things happening there, but it's energy-based. And when the price of oil falls below a certain level, which I think I recall is $70 a barrel, then there's no philanthropy. When it's above that, then there's a lot of philanthropy. There's a very, very, very good, what we would call in the U.S. community college, called Bow Valley College in Calgary. And there, you know, the universities turn out the scientists. The Bow Valley College turns out the lab technicians. Both of those have to be superb employees. So you've got great scientists, but you also need great lab technicians. The goal, because they had a visionary leader there, was to double the size of the enrollment, double the size physically too of the campus. And they were going to increase to, I think, 25,000 students. We said, okay, who cares about this? And that's the first question you ask. Who cares about this? And we went and we said, well, it's obvious. It's the business leaders in Calgary who need great employees, because if you have to fire somebody in 6 to 9 months, you're losing money. You want that person to be with you for 5 years at least. And so we built the case entirely around Bow Valley creates great employees. This is why you might want us to double the enrollment. They were taking people that had dropped out of high school. They got them back, got the you know, their equivalent degree, diploma. And then if they had other issues like daycare, if they had other issues like their car blew a tire and they didn't have $200 for a new wheel, they'd give them the money for the wheel. Their goal was to keep people in school until they graduated.
In closing, I'd like to ask the question of, you're a communications person. You come from a marketing background. What makes for great marketing in the nonprofit sector and communications? What are your parting tips for us?
Your success is built backwards from your target audience. The more you understand about your target audience, the more likely it is that you'll say something to them that actually means something to them. A lot of times, I think charities go in hoping anybody could be a donor, for instance, anybody could be a supporter. That's not true. You know, most charities are actually supported by a fairly limited number of people who I call the truest of true believers. So they're into it. They're into the mission. They're into wherever you want to go. They want to be part of a tribe. They want to be part of a movement, and so forth and so on.
I'd like you to give me the Tom Ahern elevator pitch.
I don't actually believe in elevator pitch.
You don't. Oh my goodness! You take the escalator, or you climb.
No, it isn't that. It isn't that. But I, you know, sometimes you get on the elevator, and your elevator pitch, unless the building is 80 stories tall, you're not finished with your elevator speech. My feeling is, this is the way I set it up when I'm teaching it, is, okay, you get on the elevator, you push the button, there's somebody else there, you're holding a tote bag, and the tote bag has a name or logo on it, and the person looks and says, oh, what's that? And then you turn to them, and the first thing out of your mouth is not an answer, it's a question. Are you interested in homeless veterans, or the problem of homeless veterans? And you let the conversation evolve from there.
Great insights today from Tom Ahern, fundraising consultant in terms of the marketing and communications angle that organizations need to take to be successful in their fundraising efforts. Thank you so much, Tom.
My pleasure, Jay. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Difference. I'm Jay Wirth with Convergent Nonprofit Solutions. To access our podcast library and additional fundraising help, go to convergentnonprofit.com. That's convergentnonprofit.com.